Quarterback scoring is changing, and a class of promising young passers will be entering the league next season. We're talking all that and more on Roto-Viz Radio.
What's up, Roto-Viz?
Welcome back to Roto-Viz Radio. I'm Dave Cabin, Senior Fantasy Analyst at Roto-Viz, joined by Matthew Friedman of Fantasy Labs and the Action Network. Quick programming note here. I had some things come up early this week that necessitated me pushing this week's episode to being recorded on Wednesday night. Fortunately, Matt was able to record with me on Wednesday night. You will likely be listening to this on Thursday morning. Also, going forward, likely starting next week, we may have touched upon this before, but we're probably going to be switching back to that format where we do two shorter shows each week. I'm not exactly sure of the days on those yet, but you will be made aware of that when we have a final word on that. What's going on, Matt?
Not much. Just really enjoying listening to you give the explanation of everything in the intro.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you feel that way. Now, you and I were talking about something, and before I bring this up, I want to say that I, at the end of the what I would consider like regular season, when most people would have been listening to our fantasy content, took a quick look at the reviews. Mainly positive. One review came in a 3-star. They were a little bothered by the fact that over the summer we had taken some different points in time to just talk about things that were unfootball related. So this person didn't want to hear about your coffee consumption, other opinions we might have had on things. So I don't know if they're going to like this, but you and I, as we were getting set to record, started talking about television shows, and I asked you if you had seen It's Always Sunny, or if you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which you said that you had not, but it was on your list.
Yeah, I feel like it's sacrilegious for me not to watch that because so many people I respect watch it and love it. And it's, you know, it's very gif-able. Or is it gif-able? I think it's gif. I don't know. Where are you on that?
Well, I actually listened to a podcast with the guy that invented it, or if it wasn't the guy that invented it, somebody that directly would have been like linked to him to know. I forget, but as like before
that
I heard
story went nowhere.
Yeah, it went nowhere. But before I ever heard anybody else say it, in my mind, I always pronounced it GIF. But I think that I discovered that my intuition was wrong, and I think it actually is GIF.
Okay, well, whatever it is, It's Always Sunny is highly GIFable or GIFable. So you see that on Twitter all the time, and, you know, like little bits of it that I've seen on, like, you know, YouTube or whatever, like it always seems funny. So it's on the list of shows that I should watch in the future.
Yeah. So I actually slates in at 3 for me. It's shot up the rankings now that I've started aggressively trying to make my way through the entire series. Always liked it. And it's one of those shows. It's not like you have to watch it consecutively, but I'm realizing that if you do, there's a lot of things that are then just made funnier. So it's creeped into 3rd place, probably behind Seinfeld at 1, then Curb Your Enthusiasm at 2 of comedies.
Okay, well,
for me,
what was number 3 and number 4 before this jumped over them and got the number 3 spot?
I think what probably would have been number 3 for me before, and I hadn't really thought about it, probably would have been Parks and Rec at number 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Parks and Rec, love that one. Have you seen Schitt's Creek?
Oh, yes, I have, but not the whole thing. So my wife actually just made her way through it. So I was watching pieces here and there, but since I've started back up in grad school, like I haven't had as much time, and she was enjoying it enough that like I was like, you know what, like just go ahead and watch it because I don't want you to sit around like just waiting to watch stuff with me while I'm up till 2 in the morning every night studying, so...
Schitt's Creek for me, I mean, it's a recent one, so maybe there's some recency bias kind of built into it, yep. But I think that one, is definitely in my top 5, if not top 3. And I think it is probably top 3 for me.
I've seen a lot of people crapping on it lately on Twitter.
And yeah,
I think
I mean, it did start off pretty slowly,
but go ahead.
Yeah. I can imagine it's not for everyone. And yeah, I think people have said that it starts slowly. I don't know. I thought it was funny right away. But of course, it's been well established, I do not have a very sophisticated sense of humor.
Well, I would push back on that. I would say some of what makes that show funny at different points in time is the language choices, especially that they have Moira use, which right? Which like,
yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely something to it. I will give you my quick little pitch on why I think It's Always Sunny is so funny, at least to me, and then we'll get into the football here. But what I like about it, it has that same type of spirit as Seinfeld, where there does not need to be any morals. They can be completely deplorable people, like the worst human beings you can possibly imagine, and it's completely unapologetic. Well, at the same time, I do think it makes some pretty interesting points about society at large, and it's also one of those shows that has very stupid, funny type of moments, and you might want to paint it with this broad brush of just being a stupid comedy, but there's actually a lot of like pretty intelligent thought behind it, and the characters I think are pretty well developed within the comedy, so I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good.
All right, excellent. You want to talk about quarterbacks, Matt?
Do I want to? Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah.
Let's okay. All right, so I am now going to talk about some research that I pulled together while I was working on a piece post the regular season here that centered on quarterbacks. And you and listeners might remember that probably toward like week 12, week 13 timeframe, I raised this question of, do we need to start thinking about drafting quarterbacks differently? Because we saw a lot of these young passers like Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, obviously Patrick Mahomes, to some extent Lamar Jackson. We saw these young passers really stepping up into this stratosphere with points where they were making a significant difference for teams that had them, and they were separating themselves from the rest of passers. So I actually went back and did some research on this. So I'm going to start listing off some facts, Matt, and then just feel free to interject if you think that there's anything that you want to add. So quarterback scoring, as we all know, it exploded in 2020. The top 12 players at the position averaged 26.2 points per game. That was the highest average of this century, and that was 2.2 points higher than the position's previous record of 24.0 points, which came in 2018. So to say that again, in the 20 seasons prior, quarterback ones averaged only 21.1 points per game, whereas this year they averaged 26.2, which is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, and so I guess that means in a forward-looking manner, if you are expecting quarterback scoring, maybe even to go a little bit higher, but even if it doesn't, to stay roughly the same next year, I think that means that quarterbacks should probably be drafted a little bit higher, which feels kind of wrong to say that. But I mean, I think it's fine. Like, I think the idea of like the late round quarterback kind of philosophy or perspective is that you are still deprioritizing a position that deserves to be deprioritized. And maybe you can still like continue to take the guys who are on the lower end of the spectrum within that top 12 range. But yeah, I mean, I think a big adjustment for quarterbacks should probably be made moving forward.
Right. And a pushback to this idea could be, well, of course, quarterbacks scored a lot last year because it was the highest scoring season that we've seen in league history. But we have seen points trending upward since 2000. You know, there's been some fluctuations, but more or less points are going up. I think the other thing that we need to talk about, too, and I agree with you to a very large extent with everything that you just said, is that the top 12 quarterbacks, according to fantasy points per game, this year contributed an average of an extra 4.4 rushing points to their production on a weekly basis. So as rushers, they were getting 4.4 points per game in addition to their passing volume. Now, that also was the highest total of the last 21 seasons. But the crazy thing, Matt, too, is they also averaged 21.7 passing points per game, which was the highest total of the last 21 seasons as well. So going back to 2000. So not only are they scoring more points as rushers, they're scoring more points as passers. And to me, that's a key fact, because I feel like it's easy to say to yourself, okay, well, these guys are really good rushers, but maybe that's not changing things that much. But it is, because if you graph out the average points per game by the top 12 players at each position, and you look at this graph, you see running backs falling from 2000 to now, with actually starting to come back a little bit, I should say. Wide receivers kind of hold. Tight end popped up a little bit. But really what you take away if you plot that out is you see that relative to other positions, the quarterback position has gone up. So there's a lot of ways that you can slice and dice at this. But quarterbacks are raising their value relative to other positions. And then there's a couple more things I want to point out, but I'll let you kind of enter in some of your thoughts now.
I think one thing that factors into this is that in previous years, we've probably had like a tier of, you know, like 2 to 3 guys at the top. And then the guys in that, you know, quarterback 4 to quarterback 10 range are all kind of roughly the same. And this year, I think we had this middle tier of guys who were much closer to the top tier. And I think that in part is what is really juicing the quarterback scoring within the top 12. You know, some of it is certainly kind of like league-wide trends, but I think even those trends might kind of be fueled by the improvement in quarterback play that we've seen at that top tier, which has expanded. So, you know, like 2018, it was Patrick Mahomes. 2019, it was Lamar Jackson. You know, this year, I feel like we've had a really good just overall performance from those quarterbacks at the top, where Aaron Rodgers has reemerged. You know, Tom Brady, in a new situation with great receivers around him, he reemerged this year. And then, of course, you had Josh Allen taking a big step forward. Deshaun Watson having really the best year of his career, even without DeAndre Hopkins. You know, like you just saw outstanding quarterback play near the top. And I think those guys who at the end of the season finished, you know, numbers like 3 through 6, those guys were the ones who really separated this season from the ones we've previously seen.
Yeah. And it's important to note as well that you named a lot of young players there. So 7 of the top 12 passers this year are 27 years old or younger, and a lot are significantly younger than 27. So there's reason to believe that when you look at the leaderboard of quarterback fantasy scoring for years to come, it's probably going to consist of these guys. Another interesting way to look at things, Tom Brady finished as the quarterback 11. He averaged 23.4 points per game with 2.4 passing touchdowns and 281 yards per game. That accounted for 22.2 of his points per game, but he wasn't able to finish ahead of players like Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson. Murray averaged only 18.3 passing points and Jackson just 15, but the rushing difference that we saw from them really made up that delta. And then even Aaron Rodgers, who had the second highest scoring year of his career, finished behind 4 of the other passers, and it happened because Rodgers himself averaged only 1.3 passing points. The players ahead of him only averaged 1.3 passing points per game less than him, but 3.9 more rushing points per game. So I think something that people might say to themselves is that, okay, well, big deal. Like, we've known that these Konami code quarterbacks are valuable. We know that we should be looking at quarterbacks that are rushing. Like, what are you telling me? Like, I know I need to go and find these players. But what I am saying is that as we look forward, it's possible you have 5 or 6 of these guys, and they have separated themselves from the pack. And this goes a lot into what you were talking about, Matt. Last year, 10.7 points per game separated the QB1 and the QB12. And more importantly, the difference in points per game between the QB1 and the QB6, when you compare that to the QB13 to QB18, that difference was 7.9 points. In 2012, it was just 5.7. Between 2013 and 2019, it was a difference of just 4 points per game. So in addition to quarterbacks changing their value relative to other positions, the top quarterbacks are changing their value as opposed to later round options in ways that we haven't seen before. And while I think that late round quarterback still applies, I think that we're in a bit of a different environment now that I feel is going to carry forward than we were when JJ really popularized it and people started to use it. So I think that we're seeing an evolution that we probably need to adapt to. How do we adapt to it? I am not saying that you go out and in round 1 or round 2, you go and draft Patrick Mahomes or whoever you think the QB1 is. But when you get to round 6, running backs that you're interested in are gone. There's no real compelling tight ends or wide receivers, or you're feeling pretty good about your team and there's not a single player that you have to go after because you love them or you have a void that you need to fill, maybe you start thinking about adding one of those quarterbacks then.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that. I'm probably still going to wait. You know, I'm probably still just going to be that donkey that thinks like, okay, there's a Cam Newton-esque type of player out there who is somehow going to outperform his ADP significantly and help me win a championship. But I can certainly see the allure. Like, you know, Mahomes, Murray, Allen, Watson, Jackson, and Dak, you know, assuming Dak comes back healthy, you know, that's a very solid top six. But, you know, outside of those guys, you're still going to have Russell Wilson, you know, who I think is a great like consolation yep. to all of those other guys. You still have Aaron Rodgers. You still have Justin Herbert, who could take a big step forward in his second season. You know, you still have Ryan Tannehill, who could be super efficient. You still have Matt Ryan, who might have like some of the, with Arthur Smith coming over to Atlanta, might have some of the like uber efficiency that we saw in Tennessee's offense. He might have some of that now in Atlanta, and he still has great wide receivers. You know, you could see, you know, potentially, I don't know if I want to get so ahead of myself, but like you could see Taysom Hill. And we saw what he was able to do as a runner, Taysom Hill as a late round quarterback. That could be really intriguing. So I don't know, maybe Jalen Hurts, Jones takes probably a step forward.
I was just going to say too, you can probably toss Jalen Hurts into this group too, with players like Taysom Hill.
Yeah, maybe Jalen Hurts, if, you know, hopefully he beats out Carson Wentz. Who knows how that plays out. But, yep. you know, there are guys outside of the top six that I look at and I'm like, okay, you know what? I would just still rather wait and take those guys later.
Okay, that's fair. And I don't think that based upon what I said, that I was saying that in terms of like, this is what you have to do. But I definitely think that the environment has changed enough that it does become a conversation. So
I totally agree. Like, I think we are now at that point where you can go two ways. Before, like, I just thought, like, if you do not go late round quarterback, you are probably a fool. But I don't think that's the case anymore. Like,
right.
I think it is reasonable not to take Patrick Mahomes, but to take like Dak Prescott, you know, three or four rounds later. I think that's totally reasonable.
Right. And I mean, a large part of why this is something, the idea of going for a quarterback, what you would say early now, why this is, I think, like recapitulated, is because in the confines of where we are now, because late round quarterback has become so popular, a drafter taking a quarterback early really can be round five or round six. And we're not talking round one, two, and three like people would have been doing back when, you know, you and I probably first started playing fantasy.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, so you talked about the coaching change for Atlanta. I do want to talk about coaching changes, but we will probably do that a little bit later next week. I wanted to start talking about prospects. And to finish off today's episode, I want to talk about the 2021 quarterback class, but it is likely a good time for me to remind everybody out there that listens to the show, if you use the code RVRadio2021 at checkout on a one-year subscription, you will get 10% off of that subscription, again, by using the code RVRadio2021. All kinds of coverage is going to be coming out on all of these prospects. We have the Prospect Box Score Scout that will give you player comps you can look at. We're going to have a new version of the Combine Explorer I've been looking at that will let you see those athletic measurables. All kinds of coverage. We have other tools, you know, in addition to everything I just said, that's going to get you all set and ready for this incoming draft class and the season next year. And the best ball season has already started. Mike Beers is updating all of the tools. We have all kinds of stuff for you there. All right, Matt, let's talk about the 2021 quarterback class. Before we go into specific players, I have seen a lot of mock drafts that are including an abundance of quarterbacks in round one. What's your sense in comparison to the maybe last five classes that we've seen of where this class ranks? Is it one of the better classes?
It's a weird class in part because of COVID stuff. Yep. So, you know, for instance, Trey Lance who is probably going to go, I think, in the top 16, you know, like the first half of the first round. He's played only one season. He redshirted, and then he had an awesome season in 2019. And then he didn't play this past year, or he played, you know, like one game, which was basically an exhibition. And so you have, you know, a situation with him. You have Zach Wilson, who's, you know, coming from BYU. So, you know, doesn't play the toughest schedule. So it's a kind of weirder class. And then you have like someone like Mac Jones coming from Alabama, who, you know, won a national championship, has statistically looked fantastic, but has really only like one season and like a couple of games on top of that. And it's like, that's not, you know, like that's not really much of a sample. So there are certainly guys who are strong, you know, Trevor Lawrence, a five-star recruit. And then, you know, we saw what he did as a freshman. He's looked great in college. Justin Fields, who was right up there with Lawrence as a recruit in their class coming in. And he has that, you know, like dual threat ability. So there are certainly guys to like in this class. But there are also guys who carry some significant questions just because of, you know, like the sample or where they played or things like that. But I think it's a pretty strong class overall. Like, I do think we will probably get four quarterbacks going in the top 16. I'm doubtful we get five quarterbacks in round one. Like, five is just a really high number. But I can maybe see it happening if Mac Jones somehow sneaks into the end of the first round.
Yeah. So to me, this class overall is definitely hard to get a grasp on. I haven't decided just how good I think it is. I don't think it's the greatest quarterback class of all time, but I think it's very solid. As you alluded to, given the implications of COVID, it's really hard to draw any like concrete conclusions on these guys. But let's just kind of go through them now one by one. I'll read off some stats, just some key notes on these players. And we'll just work our way through it. So Trevor Lawrence, 6'6", 220, as everybody knows, went to Clemson, came in as a freshman, played 15 games, 65% completion percentage, 3,280 yards passing, threw for 30 touchdowns, only four interceptions. That season ran for just one rushing touchdown, 177 yards. As a sophomore, continues to play at a super high level, 36 touchdowns. Over 3,600 passing yards, did throw eight picks on basically like 400 passes, which is what he'd done the year before, but did show he has some rushing ability, ran for 563 yards, nine rushing touchdowns. In 2020, in just 10 games, ran for eight rushing touchdowns, 203 rushing yards, passed four, and again in 10 games, 3,153 yards, 24 touchdowns, just five picks. Other things you might look at, an adjusted completion percentage of around 77%, which is very competitive, only ranked around 39, and this is based upon PFF stats in deep percentage, so the number or percentage of times that he's throwing passes more than 20 yards. Now, to me, that's a tough metric to make sense of because some of this depends on the offense that you're in, how many chances you need to take. And when you're playing in an offense like Clemson, that can kind of cloud things. And these were 2020 numbers. Under pressure, he's been middle of the road. But I think by and large, Matt, a lot of people view Lawrence as one of the better prospects that they've seen in a long time because of just how successful he was early on and how well he played in very big games.
Yeah. I mean, I'm yet to see a reputable mock draft that doesn't have him number one. You know, like he's just locked in as the number one pick. You know, it's hard to know what we should make of that offense in Jacksonville. You know, with him coming in with a new coaching staff, how is he going to connect with his receivers there? Are they going to bring in some new receivers? Like there are lots of questions with Jacksonville. And so I think it's a hard landing spot, but him on his own as a recruit, and then as a college player and now as a prospect, he doesn't really have any holes. You know, like I don't think there's anything that you can look at and say like, I wish he were different. Like maybe the one thing is like, oh, I wish he were a better runner, but you know, like he's still like the greatest, well, I don't want to say like the greatest pocket, like college pocket passer of all time, but like he's up there, you know, like he was the number one pocket passer as a recruit in his class, and he did absolutely nothing in college to make you think that his status as that, as a recruit, was unwarranted. So I think he certainly deserves to be the number one pick. And it's hard to say that things aren't looking up for him as an NFL player.
Yeah. You know, only 21 at 19.2 at the end of his freshman season had put up those crazy numbers. So there is certainly a lot to like about Lawrence. We'll have to see. You know, the one thing too, he does have some receivers there, right, in Jacksonville. I mean, I think Chark is pretty good. I think Chenault's pretty good. So we'll see what happens. Let's talk about Justin Fields. Now, Fields, if you go back to the beginning of the college football season, I had seen a lot of mocks that were projecting him to go as the second quarterback in the draft. Not all the mocks are reflecting that now. In fact, in some, I've seen him fall back behind Wilson and Lance. So we don't know exactly where he's going to go. He's 6'3", 223. If I didn't mention, played at Ohio State, but actually transferred to Ohio State via Georgia, where he played in limited action in 11 games as a freshman, went 27 for 39, did throw 4 touchdown passes, 0 picks. Comes into Ohio State in his sophomore season, completes 67% of passes, 3,273 yards, 41 touchdowns to just 3 picks. As a rusher, rushes for 10 touchdowns, 484 yards, follows things up in an 8-game season in 2020, passes for 2,100 yards, completion percentage of 70%, 22 passing touchdowns to 6 interceptions. And then as a rusher, 5 rushing touchdowns, 383 yards. His I should probably also mention his passing AYA was 10.74. I did not say Lawrence's. His was 9.77. I actually do like to look at AYA. Isn't always a clear indicator of what a player might be able to do, but I do like it. And Fields's adjusted completion percentage, 81%, only Mac Jones, who we'll talk about in a little bit, was better. You know, like Lawrence, didn't go down, didn't throw deep all the time. I do think he could do it. And then under pressure, completed 62% of passes, which ranked around 22 in the nation.
Yeah, Fields is, I don't know. I mean, I think he might be the best fantasy option out of the guys that we're going to talk about, because he does have that dual threat ability. He was, you know, he was right up there with Lawrence as a recruit when they were entering college. Lawrence was the number one pocket passer. Fields was the number one dual threat quarterback. And, you know, like Lawrence, Fields had a pretty good college career. You know, I don't think there was anything that he did once he became the starter last year and this year that would make you think that there's something that's hugely deficient in his game. He's not the pocket passer that Trevor Lawrence is. That's just something that either he's going to have to learn, or you know, offensive coordinators are just going to have to plan around that. And he doesn't, you know, for a guy who's more of a runner, he doesn't have quite the improvisational like wizardry that you might want. Like, you know, in terms of like being able to scramble out of the pocket and then throw it deep or something like that. That's still not something that's like a strength of his, but when he escapes the pocket and takes off, like he's very good. Like you could clearly see how he becomes, you know, like a Konami code top 10 type of fantasy quarterback almost right away, just because of his running ability. So wherever he goes, he's someone that I'm definitely going to be looking at.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, especially early on in their careers, too. If you're looking for the guy that might be able to make the most immediate fantasy impact, it might be Fields. Zach Wilson, out of BYU, 6'3", 210, played in 9 games as a freshman, threw 182 passes, completed 66%, 1,578 passing yards, just 12 passing touchdowns to 3 interceptions. In his sophomore season, threw 319 passes, completed 62%, 2,381 passing yards, just 11 passing touchdowns to 9 passing interceptions. Really low AYA that year of 6.88. Then in 2020, completes 73% of passes, through 333 times, 3,651 yards, 32 touchdowns, 2-3 interceptions. AYA really jumps up to 12.48. Admittedly, I do not know much about the schemes they were running at BYU and if there was a big shift between 19 and 20. At any rate, though, you know, takes a very nice progression forward there to end his career. Unlike Fields and Lawrence, the opening resume not quite as strong.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't. Yeah, I mean, certainly in 2019, you could look at the numbers and be like, why is anyone interested in this guy? But yeah, he did really come on in 2020. I think some of that is a function of competition. You know, like, by and large, BYU wasn't really playing all that many strong opponents. And my feeling, maybe I'm wrong about this, but my feeling is that in this, you know, like, COVID impacted season, it's probably the teams that are a little bit lower down the board that, like, don't have, like, the depth and also just kind of don't have, like, I'd say, like, the strong kind of, like, institutional memory of, like, what happens year to year, so that, like, players come in and they just kind of know what it is that they're doing. Like, I think those teams lower down the board would tend to be impacted a little bit more by COVID, especially on defense. And so, you know, when you have BYU playing literally not one team that is in a major conference, I don't know. Like, it just, it means that, not that, like, his performance is suspect at all. It's just that it's not coming, you know, nearly against the same level of competition. And so I'm a little bit skeptical, especially considering that he did it only 1 year.
Right. And the other thing, too, that you have to throw in there, and it's always a dangerous thing to try to ding players too much for where they're playing, but in my opinion, when you compare him to players like Fields and Lawrence and Mac Jones, who we've seen in these national spotlight games, in these games where everything is on the line, that's something that you can't point to with Wilson as just another check you can put in a box. So I don't know. I'm not as pumped about him as other people are. Granted, I don't know how to watch a quarterback play in his college film and project that and how it would translate to the NFL. So we will have to see where he goes. I think for some of these quarterbacks too, like we always talk about, it's going to be somewhat situation dependent. I know some people think that Wilson's going to end up replacing Sam Darnold with the Jets. Who knows what the Jets are going to look like as we move forward. But I certainly think that we could see one of these guys end up in a more favorable situation than Lawrence and Wilson if they are the first two off the board. That brings us to, oh, I should probably mention on Wilson, he did have an 81% adjusted completion percentage, which was really, really good. One of the best players in the country at that. Deep percentage rank of 30, ranked 29 under pressure. All of the guys we're talking about today were pretty similar in all of the measures that we're talking about. But that was kind of the roundup on him. Trey Lance, who we've mentioned.
One thing to mention on Wilson. I think it, I mean, who knows with all of these quarterbacks after Trevor Lawrence, but I think what gives Wilson the edge over Fields, at least from, you know, like, the sort of, like, tape grinder perspective, and this is not like my opinion, this mm-hmm. is just sort of what I've read. People who actually, like, look at quarterback play and, like, think they can break the game down, they think that Wilson has the edge over Fields in terms of his arm strength, his passing ability in general, and then his pocket presence, and also his ability to improvise, like, to make plays outside of the pocket, yep. outside of structure. And so that is why I think Wilson will probably go ahead of Fields. But again, I think Fields is probably likelier to be the better fantasy quarterback because of his running ability.
Certainly fair. Trey Lance, 6'3", 224. So he went to North Dakota State, which cloudies things a bit. And as Matt said, he really only played one season. That 2019 season, though, completed 67% of passes on 287 attempts, had 2,786 yards, threw 28 touchdowns, 2-0 interceptions. That is something I think people are really going to focus on. And I would say that even if you're playing at a lower level of competition, throwing 28 touchdown passes to zero interceptions is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing is obviously the passing is great. The rushing is what really gets me excited with him.
Yes. So 169 attempts in 2019, went for 1,100 yards, that's 6.5 yards a carry, with 14 touchdowns. Again, you can discount this somewhat based upon the level of competition, but putting up that many yards as a quarterback and that many touchdowns, you have to be doing something right and have some level of skill to achieve that.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to be just 21 years old as a rookie, which is pretty exciting. And he is coming from the same school, the same system that produced Carson Wentz for, you know, like whatever that is worth. Like, regardless of whatever you think about Wentz, he has been productive in the NFL. And like, it's arguable that if not for an ACL injury, he would still be, you know, like one of the better quarterbacks in the league. So, you know, I don't think it's disqualifying that Lance is coming from North Dakota State. You know, I think if he's drafted at the top half of the first round and he has the production he does and he's going to be only 21 years old as a rookie and he has that running ability. I mean, I think you treat him basically like you treat any other quarterback selected in that range.
And if anybody tries to use Carson Wentz in an argument that is counter Trey Lance being able to be a legitimate NFL prospect, I think that is pretty erroneous, because if anything, it should demonstrate that players can come from a school like North Dakota State that do have NFL skills and NFL ability and be a quarterback that many believe at any point in time could lead a franchise. So to me, it's actually something that you can view as a positive. And, you know, there is precedent for a player like Trey Lance emerging, making his way to the NFL and being productive. That brings us to Mac Jones, who led Alabama to a national championship, 6'2.5", 217. So actually the smallest of the passers we're talking about this evening. As a 20-year-old freshman, only through 13 attempts, but plays 11 games for Alabama in 2019, 141 attempts, completes 70%, 69 to be exact, 1,500 yards, 14 passing touchdowns to 3 interceptions. But the season that everyone is going to look at, 13 games in 2020, 402 attempts, went for 4,500 yards, 77% completion percentage, 41 passing touchdowns to 4 interceptions, a career AYA of 12.47, does not do a whole lot as a rusher. I know that some people are going to say that Jones played at Alabama and that raises his production. Sure. However, I'm not sure that playing at Alabama is that much different than playing at Clemson or Florida. Jones also has the highest adjusted completion percentage in the class, 84%. Didn't have to go deep all that often, so ranks 42 in the nation, 70% under pressure, which was really good. I wonder, Matt, should Mac Jones be getting more talk? Because to me, some of these stats are pretty insane. I think he profiles extremely well. And I'm going to say that if he did this at a school other than Alabama and people weren't discrediting it just because of all the NFL receivers he played with, they might be more inclined to view him as a player that could challenge Lawrence or Fields or any of these guys to be the top pick in the class. Now, I do think it's fair if maybe you want to have some questions because not every quarterback is throwing to the ridiculous arsenal of receivers that he had, but I'm actually pretty impressed with Jones.
Yeah, the numbers are good. A question would be, like, what did you think of A.J. McCarron, like, back in the day coming out of college?
Okay, I guess the difference is I honestly thought that A.J. McCarron was kind of like trash coming out of college. You know, like, for the NFL, he never looked to me like an NFL passer. I felt the way that things were being conducted back then, and this is going back a long time, and I did not know as much about football then as I do now. But my take at the time was that a lot of it was really just the system, and I didn't see him doing many things that looked that different. In my still somewhat uneducated brain, when I do see the things that Jones is doing and the way Alabama is running things now, it's a lot easier for me to get my head around the fact that he might be able to translate this to the NFL.
Okay. I think that's fair. I still tend to, I still kind of imagine that Mac Jones is basically AJ McCarron. And that might be unfair to Mac Jones. But like Mac Jones did have better receivers than McCarron had. The one thing he has going for him is that he was more efficient as a passer. So McCarron's best season was 10.8 adjusted yards per attempt. Whereas, Mac Jones, blows that away this year with 12.8. But I don't know if there's really a massive difference between Jones and McCarron. They're both net negatives as runners. What McCarron had going for him is that he had like three years as a starter. Mac Jones is basically like 1.3 years as a starter. Like McCarron, he doesn't really have a strong arm. It's not like he was a highly recruited guy. I mean, he was highly recruited enough to go to Alabama, which is like, that's very good. it's not like he was a 4 or 5 star recruit. I believe he was a 3 star recruit. And he doesn't have like great size, doesn't have good arm strength. It's just like, what is there about him as a player that really distinguishes him? And it's probably that he's smart and that he has these great numbers. But if the numbers you can, I don't want to say excuse away, but you can explain by not just the receivers around him, but like all of the other NFL talent around him, like all of the offensive linemen, like the running backs, just everybody on that team is a future NFL player. If you put him in that context, it explains some of the production. And then you're just left with this guy who has, 17 career starts in college, no rushing ability, and a mediocre arm. Okay. If he gets drafted in the first round, then you have to respect it. But I kind of look at what we see right now, and I don't see why he should be drafted in the first round.
Okay. I think you make a lot of good points there. You do. And it does make me question my level of excitement for Jones to some extent. I guess one thing that would be a curious question, though, is why you wouldn't have held some of this against Tua or Jalen Hurts, for example. Jalen Hurts, although obviously it's a different thing because you could see what he could do as a rusher. But let's just kind of take a second and compare why you would have been so much more interested in Tua. Is it because we did see him at an earlier age come in and really take things over? He also might have some better physical attributes.
Yeah, you just named it.
Okay.
Right. So Tua, think of it this way. They entered at pretty much the same time. Mac Jones was a quarterback for Alabama in 2018. Tua is the guy that year. Tua even came in 2017, right? Like in the national championship game in 2017. So like Tua came in right away and was also a higher recruited quarterback and then had to beat out Jalen Hurts for the number one job. I just think and he's a better runner. So you put all of that together and Tua has the same impact there of all of the other NFL players. So you kind of have to question the production a little bit, but Tua he was a better player entering college and he took over right away. I think that's the main thing that he has going for him over Mac Jones.
Okay. That's certainly fair. I will leave us with the fact that I think I might end up being a bit higher on Jones than other people will. I recently completed my rankings for the DCC Rookie Guide. Volume 1 will be coming out soon, so make sure you go check that out. And I did have him, I want to say, back behind all of the players that we've mentioned. It might be hard for me to actually make him jump, up over those guys, but he possibly could. But you did kind of put some cold water there on the fire that I had going for him. We are going to close with Kyle Trask, another SEC quarterback, 6'5", 239, played his college ball at Florida. Negligible work as a freshman in 2019, comes in 354 passing attempts, 2,941 yards, 25 touchdowns to 7 interceptions, 8.83 adjusted yards per attempt. As a junior, closes off at 22.8 in just 12 games, threw 437 times, 4,283 yards, 69% completion percentage, 43 touchdowns to 8 picks, 10.95 adjusted yards per attempt. Did not do a whole lot in terms of rushes, did not do a whole lot in terms of rushing yards as a rusher, just 50 yards on 64 attempts, 3 touchdowns in his 2020 season. Solid adjusted completion percentage at 76, ranked 35 in a, you know, deep ball percentage, largely consistent with the backs we've talked about, ranked 11th in completion percentage when under pressure, with 67% completion rate. That is a very solid 2020 season. Decent campaign as a sophomore. Again, biggest player in the class. I think that it's easy to see why some people might want to get behind Trask.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually a, let me make sure I'm just right on this. I believe he's a redshirt senior. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, a little bit older. I think he'll be 23 or 24 next year as a rookie. But like, he's got, I don't know, like, I'm just not going to be too enthusiastic about him, because yep. he's probably not going to be drafted even in round two. Like, maybe round 3 or round 4. So, like, at that point, I'm just, you know, I'm kind of off of him. Guys in that range just tend not to work out, but maybe he will. He certainly has the strong arm, and his production, his passing production last year was fantastic. Like, there's no way of trying to deny it. Like, no one should try to deny it. He was great as a passer in 2020, but he has zero rushing ability. Like, he's a negative as a runner. And I just tend to stay away from those guys. So, like, add the lack of rushing ability next to his likely lack of draft capital, and I'm just, you know, it's like, what's the point?
So I probably should have had us kind of set the stage for it, because I think that at the quarterback position, they're kind of hard to disentangle. But the opinions that you've been giving on players, what percentage of that opinion is through the lens of what this player might be able to do as an NFL passer, and what percentage of it is through the lens of what can this player do as a fantasy player? Because you're talking a lot about rushing production. So clearly, if we're thinking about things from a purely fantasy lens, we're going to be a lot more excited about those guys with the rushing production.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking primarily from a fantasy lens, but okay. I mean, in the current NFL, it is, I think, really hard for a rookie quarterback to come in, or even like a second year guy, whoever it is, for someone to come in and be an above average quarterback if he doesn't have at least like a floor of rushing production. You know what I mean? And with someone like Trask, someone like Mac Jones, I just don't see that.
Got it. So that takes us through the guys I wanted to talk about. I guess to close things out, Matt, if you are a dynasty player, are there any of these names that you're really interested in trying to get? Perhaps if Lawrence slips into round 2, you'd be interested in him. Beyond him, any other of these guys that you would potentially be targeting?
Yeah, I think Lawrence will probably go higher than he probably should. So that means I will just be off of him.
Yep.
Justin Fields is really the guy I would be looking at. But I mean, I say that, I still think he's going to be drafted before Zach Wilson, before Trey Lance. So like, from a value perspective, Lance is the guy that I think I'd probably want the most of, or I will probably get the most of if I'm targeting quarterbacks, because he has that running ability. He's so young. And even though he was playing at a lower level of college competition, as a passer, he still looked really good. So I think there's even hope that although you are getting him for his rushing production, he might be better as a passer than you would expect. And if that's the case, then, I mean, he could be like, he could maybe be like what everyone was hoping Kyler Murray was going to be as a rookie. You know, like he has significant upside if his passing ability matches his running ability.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically where I was at too. To me, it really was Fields and Lance would be the guys. Maybe Lawrence if something went crazy in one of my drafts, because, you know, it is possible. It does seem like with him that he could be one of these transcendent passers. And then obviously with Lance and Fields, like you've mentioned, you might be able to get that fantasy output based on the rushing production and the possibility that they're even better passers than one might imagine. But the rest of these guys, I really don't see myself targeting. And then beyond the players that we've listed, I haven't seen anybody else yet that has really grabbed my attention. Granted, I haven't actively seeked out or like tried to identify any one of these guys as somebody that I might attach myself to. So that could be subject to change. But like at, you know, quick glance, looking through all the metrics, I normally would. Nobody's jumped out yet.
Here's a random question. And I'm asking sort of like with a point in mind, but like, do you, okay, I'll try to think about how to phrase this. Oh, anyway. Okay. So I think it's, I butchered all that, but
that's fine.
I think it's easier to project, with the quarterbacks going from college to the NFL to project their rushing ability and their rushing production than their passing ability in production. Like, you know, I can think that Trevor Lawrence is a really good passer and he might get in the NFL and just totally suck. And, you know, like there might be a situation where I think a guy isn't that good of a passer and he turns out to be really good. Like there's just, it seems like a wide range of outcomes for passing. And I think it's pretty hard to evaluate quarterbacks in general, passing in particular, but I think it's much easier to project if a guy is a really good runner in college, that he's likely to be a pretty good runner in the NFL, which is why I tend to focus more on the running, because it's something that is a little more certain, a little more projectable. And then it just so happens, I think it's also like the thing that probably matters the most in terms of fantasy, at least.
That's really well said. And that makes a bunch of sense. Everything you just said, especially when you think about trying to project what a quarterback's passing output will be like. There's a bunch of factors that go into that too. A lot of those outside of their control. Does he get into a scheme that fits what he's going to be able to do? Is he going to be able to pick up that scheme, understand NFL coverages, different things that defenses will be doing? Does he have the supporting cast? Are the coaches there the right ones for him? Do they know what they're doing? Whereas the rushing, a lot of that, I think, is going to go back to the ability that they have athletically, then to be creative, improvise, have some natural instincts. There's just less going on there, so it makes a lot of sense. The interesting thing I think about, Matt, is as we see more success about these young passers that are athletic, that are making things happen with their feet, how quickly does the league adjust for this? And we get to a point now where a player like Justin Fields is going to be getting in the conversation and sustaining himself in that conversation at the top of the board just based upon the rushing ability. I think that's going to be really interesting to see. Which maybe that does create a situation where teams are already on this kind of bandwagon and they are going to be going after Fields and Lance pretty early. We will have to see. But I would be shocked, right? Let's take 1 second here to stop. It would be absolutely shocking if Lawrence doesn't go one overall. Like you said, you've seen that in every mock. You think there's any chance he doesn't?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chance, but I think it has more to do with like if there's something freaky that happens, you know, like he suffers some sort of injury or I don't know, like some like horrible news comes out about him, like whatever it is. I think it would have something to do with like his like off the field stuff or just something random that happens to him instead of like we just analyzed this guy and we decided he's not the number one pick or we're going with this other player.
Right. All right. If Wilson doesn't, well, out. All right. The number two pick, who has the best, like, Well, I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase this question, but the mocks I've seen now, I'm mainly seeing Wilson, but who do you think the number two pick owner of the Jets is? Let's just do it like that. And if you really don't have a compelling answer, just say it.
Yeah. Right now I have mocked Zach Wilson to the Jets. I'm like the sharper mockers who are putting things out at this time of the year, they are leaning more towards Wilson over Fields. Yep. I'm looking at the prop market, which isn't exactly like, so the props for number one overall pick, and those are really the only props that I'm seeing out there, they have Fields ahead of Wilson. That's not to say that, you know, if they put out something for the number two pick, Fields would be ahead of Wilson, but he probably would be. So I'm kind of going against the consensus of the market here, but, you know, whatever. I don't care. It's so early, but right now I do think that Wilson probably has the edge, but that's based just on two things. One, what I'm seeing in mock drafts, and then two, what I am seeing in, you know, like whatever preliminary prospect profiles are out there. I think the NFL will probably prefer someone who's more of a pocket passer, and that's what Wilson is in comparison to Fields.
Definitely. One name actually that I just remembered that I was going to mention, if people wanted to look into some of these quarterbacks too that might have more rushing potential, more athletic quarterbacks, would be Kellen Mond, the quarterback from Texas A&M. Played 4 years, was involved heavily in his final 3 years, did see some work as a freshman. Career passing yards, 9,578, 71 passing touchdowns to 27 interceptions, rushed for 22 touchdowns, and over 1,600 yards in his career. Unless you have any thoughts on Mond, we can probably shut things down.
No, Mond's definitely up there. And then I'd say one more guy is also Sam Ehlinger from Texas.
Yep.
Yeah, he had good passing stats and also some good running stats too.
Nice. All right. So my plan is that next week we will start talking about running backs and wide receivers in this class. Once we get through talking about the prospects, maybe we will pop back to looking at just some of the veterans from a redraft dynasty perspective, kind of the way that we did with the 2020 rookie running backs and wide receivers. But I did want to start popping into prospects because before we know it, we are going to be looking at pro days, getting even closer to the draft and all that. So I wanted to make sure that everybody at least had somewhat of an idea of what these classes are going to look like.
Dave, that sounds interesting, but there is the Super Bowl next week. I don't know if you
oh my gosh. That. Okay, yeah, you're right. We should probably talk about that quickly, huh?
Yeah, maybe next week we'll talk about the Super Bowl.
Okay, yep. So we should probably talk about that on next week's show. All right. Yeah. You got me there, Matt. All right. I'm really glad that you brought that up. All right, that actually will do it for this episode. You can reach us at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at MattFTheOracle. Thanks to Rotoviz for sponsoring the show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And as always, remember, it's not a fantasy if you believe it.